football time.
Here we go, D!
Time to get ready for the weekend.
E-man!
This is Jake and TD with Jake Lyman and ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter Teron Davenport.
Presented by Soul Restaurant Nashville.
Your sports live here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Happy Friday evening, Nashville. Welcome to Jake and TD, presented by Soul Nashville. Jake Lyman, ESPN NFL Nation, Titans reporter Teron Davenport with you for the next hour, getting you set for your football weekend. Titans are at Buffalo this weekend. We will talk about the Titans and Bills, also recap the Titans' loss to the Colts back on Sunday, and much more. Should be a fun show. TD, what's up? How you been this week?
Oh, man, been really good. I'm looking forward to Anchor Bar or Duff's. Those wings tomorrow, man, that's what's in order. I was telling my lady, I said, you know, Buffalo is a city where there's not really much to do. So I was like, listen, I'm looking forward to this Saturday. I'm going to order me a bunch of wings, and I'm going to go get those and go back to the room. And I'm watching college football. I'm not doing anything.
I love it. I mean, that's the one thing about Buffalo. You got to get the wings.
Yeah.
Are you I know it's a sin up there to get ranch. Are you ranch, blue cheese?
I'm more of a blue cheese.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I honestly like to just taste the flavor itself. Like, give me that good Buffalo wing flavor and season it right, and let's rock out that way.
I need to get up to Buffalo. I have a friend who's a big Bills fan. I went up there when I was like 12 years old.
Really?
It was one of the crazier Titans games you probably could have seen during the, like, Jake Locker era. Ryan Fitzpatrick was still the Bills quarterback at that point. And I think the game ended, like, 52-49 or something like that.
Was T.O. there?
He might have been. They had a kick return for a touchdown in that game. I remember that. I heard the shout song more times than I ever need to hear in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Titans did come out on top. They got a win, but I need to get back up there when I was 11 or 12, I couldn't enjoy Buffalo wings. I didn't really like the spicy stuff as much. I need to get back up there and give it another shot.
Yeah, the wings, and then also just that, I call it Rich Stadium. I know they call it Highmark Field or whatever, but low-key, I was somewhat of a Bills fan growing up.
Really?
Oh, man, I loved Thurman Thomas. James Lofton. It's funny. You should see when he does the games here. Like, I geek out when he comes, like, yo, that's James Lofton. I go over, I'd be like, and I always say, the original Randy Moss. And he just cracks up because he was the original legit deep threat that everybody was like, yeah, he's going to get his regardless. But Andre Reed is my favorite football player ever, you know. So, yeah, even though I grew up liking the Eagles, the 49ers, the Bills were another team that I just always liked that team, man.
See, I was too young for their run with Jim Kelly,
I
have watched the 30 for 30, the Four Falls of Buffalo. That's one of my favorite documentaries out there because you can really see how tough it was for those guys. I mean, that such a talented team. You mentioned all those guys. Bruce Smith, the NFL's all-time leading sacker.
Like, Nate Odoms, Henry Jones. It's funny, I did a story. Hey, listen, Bills and Titans. I mean, you know what comes to mind, the Music City Miracle.
Of course.
Right? And I did a story. It was like an oral history of it, looking back. And, yo, it was really, really dope. Obviously, talking to, you know, Frank Wycheck, you know, talking to Kevin Dyson, talking to Lorenzo Neal, but on the Bills side, you know, because after Scott Norwood missed that 47-yarder, Steve Christie came in from Tampa. And, you know, it was like, oh, wow, if only they could have had him. Like, who knows how, you know. So it was, yeah, talking to him and reminiscing on that. And Steve Tasker, it's the Bills and I, like, we have a good relationship. I still really like that team. But we're going to cover it neutrally this week.
Should be a fun one. I mean, Bills and Titans, it feels like at least – outside of a couple of blowouts there, the COVID blowout where the Titans took it to them on the Tuesday night game, and then 2 years ago on Monday Night Football when the Bills kind of took it to the Titans. There's been some good games. Boy. The Monday night game here where Josh Allen got stuffed by Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
The Titans coming up short when Nick Williams dropped that ball in the corner of the end zone. So hopefully we get another good game between the Bills and Titans.
Some doozies. Well, they got another weapon now, right?
They do.
Mari Cooper in the mix. Woo.
Couple of moves in the wide receiver market coming down this week. Mari Cooper going over for a third-round pick and then a late-round pick swap from the Browns, and then Davante Adams going to the Jets. So the two teams who just played on Monday Night Football, both adding to their wide receiver rooms as we inch towards the trade deadline.
Yeah, wasting no time getting deals done, that's for sure.
Well, we will see if the Titans end up making any deals up until the trade deadline. If they do, you would think they're going to be sellers after the result on Sunday night, or Sunday afternoon, I should say, falling 20-17 to the Colts, now 1-4 on the year. TD, not just kind of an ugly game all around. You know, lots of punts. The Titans only turned it over the one time, but it was in a big spot where they needed to make a drive there, and Levis threw it down the sideline. It was intercepted. You know, coming off the bye week, I think maybe you thought the Titans would be a little bit crisper and a little bit cleaner, and it just wasn't like that as you may have expected coming off the week off.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the type of effort that you would expect coming off the bye week, especially with a guy like Brian Callahan who was said to be so in tune offensively. I'm going to tell you the truth, and I wrote about it. I touched on it on Wednesday. I think Callahan is being held back by Levis. I really do. And that's not a – it is a knock on Levis. I'm not going to pull a punch. It is a knock on Levis. And the thing is, right now, to me, it feels like as if Levis – there's too much going on, right? And he's not processing quick enough. And there's just a lot going on in his mind. And I'm going to pull a quote from when he was asked about just throwing the ball short as opposed to intermediate after the game on Sunday. This is what Will Levis said, I quote, "I'm just throwing the ball to who I think it should be thrown to. There's no quick game emphasis. There's no, hey, we're just trying to get the ball out there. We have plays dialed up, and I'm just throwing it to who I feel like is the right one to throw it to. And there were a couple times today," now this is the part, "and there were a couple times today where I did have a couple of those quicker throws that I just took, and we went back and looked at it, and if I would have progressed backside, we would have had something. But the first time," now listen to this, "but the first time you bypass that first throw and get back to that, then it's a sack. And why don't you take the first one, you know? So it's playing that game. There's times to know when we can really hunt up something in the second, third, fourth part of the progression, but I'm just trusting what I see, trying to make the throws when they are." Now I'm going to take that to a question I asked him a little bit later about how they're having him be a situational manager. They progressed the term from game to situational manager. And he said that, "I think I'm seeing things well. I think the more that I get reps in this offense, the more I'll know when I can see when those bigger plays are there where I can start bypassing some of those first and second reads. And that just comes with reps, and that comes with trusting the coverage that you see and the space that you see." And, yeah, I just hope to get there in these next few weeks once we get into the meat of the season, and hopefully we can just get this thing rolling here pretty soon. To me, those words are words of someone who has too much going on and is not just playing. Because anytime you're thinking about, okay, you know what, I'm going to bypass this because I think that read down there is going to be there, but if I bypass this, go to that, and then come back to it, I might get sacked. There's too much going on.
In the 3 or 4 seconds you have before you get sacked, you can't think of all that.
No. You got in addition to, oh, wait, I see the safety buzzing down into the box, and this one is moving to the middle. There's too much.
And you're right. I think you see Brian Callahan sees that in the way he's calling plays. The first drive was maybe the biggest indicator of that. Well, you got an 8-yard run from Tony Pollard to start the day, and then just two screen passes into the flats, which – yes, it did set up the Nick Westbrook-Ikhina touchdown a few plays later, one drive later. But it just felt so conservative because I don't feel like Brian Callahan trusts that Will Levis can make the right read and throw it down the field without causing a disastrous play like he has a couple times this season.
And at 2nd and 2, the playbook should be as wide open as possible.
You got everything.
You can do whatever you want to do, except punt. You know what I mean? So it's like that's when – I get the screen, but that's when you could really, really do something. Then you look a little bit later, second half, Calvin Ridley. Well, when you're ready to get into Calvin Ridley, we will. But, yeah, you're right. That first drive, you know, it wasn't the first down as much to me as it was the second and two. Anything you want, and you dial up a screen. And I get it. You want to, you know, get that, get your guys' touches and things like that. But that Colts defense is not an overly aggressive blitzing type of defense, so you don't really have to.
They were the worst defense in football coming into Sunday's game, and the Titans couldn't throw for more than 100 yards on them. We will get into Calvin Ridley in the next segment, but quickly on Brian Callahan, just wanted to touch on the two punt decisions in the fourth quarter, because I know those have gotten some looks there. I think it goes kind of hand in hand with what we've been talking about not trusting Will Levis. I think he trusted his defense on that fourth and seven with 2.5 minutes left to get a stop more than he trusted Will Levis to convert a fourth and seven, which he hadn't proven all day that he could get.
If your defense is one of the top in the nation, in the league, you should trust them. So I don't knock that decision. I don't. And especially when Levis didn't get sacked in that game. He didn't really get pressured in that game. He only passed for 95 yards.
Yeah.
And 16 of them came on that last drive, just where it was like, okay, I'm going to give you. I'll give you anything up to 70 yards, but you're not getting in the end zone. So it's free.
Yes. And there can be good quarterback games where you only throw for 95 yards. I mean, we saw the Titans run to the AFC Championship game a couple years ago. They didn't have to throw the football because Derrick Henry was so good. That wasn't the case on Sunday. Yes, Tony Pollard was solid, but it's not like they were dominating so much on the ground. Exactly. They just couldn't get anything going.
Couldn't get it going, man. And I don't blame Callahan for punting on fourth and seven. That ain't playing scared. That's playing smart.
And the last couple of games to start the year, you kind of felt like you can make some excuses for Will Levis and feel like, oh, well, the offensive line gave up 9 sacks in the Green Bay game. Or there were some bad drops in the Jets game. Calvin really dropped the ball downfield. That one, it kind of felt like it was almost exclusively on Will Levis. We will talk about Calvin Ridley coming up next. He had some words to say after the game. We won't play that clip for you because I don't have the time to beep on all of that. Yeah. But we will talk about Calvin Ridley and L'Jarius Sneed, some of the high-priced additions that didn't have their best game against Indianapolis on Sunday. That's coming up next. Jake and TD, presented by Soul Nashville here on this Friday evening on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake and TD, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, Friday evenings with you, presented by Soul Nashville. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, recapping the Titans' loss back on Sunday to the Indianapolis Colts, falling to 1-4 on the season. Also, getting ready for the Bills game, coming up on Sunday, a noon kick from Buffalo as the Titans look to get back on track. We teased before the break, TD and I are going to talk about some of the high-priced additions in the offseason. Calvin Ridley, L'Jarius Sneed, both nearly $100 million men in the offseason. And they've had their moments throughout the first month of the season. I don't think anyone's going to say either of them have completely been failures as additions. But Sunday was not a good day for either of them. Calvin Ridley, 8 targets, no catches. Most of those targets came late in the game when the Titans...
5
in the fourth quarter, I believe, right? And, you know, at that point, You kind of had to air it out and hope you can make some plays down the stretch. Calvin Ridley, I mentioned I'm not going to play the clip, but he had some things to say about he needs to get the ball earlier in the game, needs to get into the game plan a little bit more. We'll talk about Sneed next, but thoughts on Calvin Ridley's day. You know, it's been a tough start to his Titans career outside of really the one big catch against the Jets 3-4 weeks ago. Outside of that, he's been pretty quiet for a guy who's getting paid nearly $100 million.
If there's one thing I really like about Ridley, it's his passion and his fire. Like, that dude has it in spades inside of him. And it doesn't always come out, but when it does, you feel it. And Sunday was one of those cases. And you're right. 8 targets, 0 catches. You know, that hasn't happened since 2015.
I saw that.
Coincidentally, Amari Cooper, who was traded on Tuesday, it's the guy who did it last with the Raiders against the Broncos. Ridley had his first 0 catch performance since 2020, week 4 with the Falcons. It was against the Packers, and there's a lot of frustration there. And we've talked about it before. It's a horse that I've beaten even beyond its death as far as getting wide receivers the ball early. You know, I've mentioned Steve Smith. I've mentioned Jerry Rice. I've mentioned, you know, A.J. Green, too, not as much. But you got to get these guys the ball early. And it's not because they're divas or prima donnas or selfish. They want to help win so much that if you don't get them involved early, they don't always check out, but they got to get into the flow of the game.
Yep.
And if you're not getting into the flow of the game, it's very hard to it's like asking the guy to come off the bench, right, and hit a three-pointer for you. You know what I mean? Like Steve Kerr, he would come in and he would hit the threes, but he would do it throughout the game. So when it's clutch time and he does it, my stroke is good. It's good. You know what I mean? It's hard to do that when you're not in the mix. Now, I thought it was interesting that he said, get me the ball early. And everybody turned around and said, hey, that's Brian Callahan's fault. Because Brian Callahan was asked about it, and he was like, well, you know, it's not because of lack of intent. And at first he said, you know, Calvin is not the first guy to make that type of demand. Listen, I'm sure there were many times Jamar Chase said that in Cincinnati.
Yep.
But the key thing is he said it's not because of lack of intent. Now, if you go back and you look, Ridley's first target didn't come until the second quarter, okay? And the route, it was he and Chig on the left side. Chig was tight to the, you know, right? He was in line tight end. He released off the ball. The linebacker went with him. Chig had a little bit of a magnet in his chest and got jammed up, right? So that kind of knocked the timing off a little bit, but he fought off it, and he cleared it out. Now, underneath there, you had nothing but air and opportunity because Ridley did a good job, boom, getting off the ball, had the corner behind him. All Levis had to do was just like, before he came out the break, just throw it to a spot, make Ridley accept. Kind of like what Ryan Tannehill would always do with A.J. Brown.
Right.
Throw it to the spot, you go get it, run through the tuck, and get me some yards after the catch. But Levis didn't throw it until after Ridley made his break. It was an incompletion. Now, if you're Ridley and you're seeing that, you know, this is my play. This is my chance to make this catch. Oh, wow, Chig, he cleared it out. But my quarterback didn't give me the ball. That's frustrating.
And Calvin Ridley, Will Levis has to be able to make those plays. And you mentioned that Brian Callahan said that it's not for lack of intent. I'm sure they're trying to get Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins involved early in games. But like we talked about in the first segment, if Will Levis doesn't know what's going on and can't process quick enough, he's not going to make the right reads,
yeah,
and he's not going to be able to get the ball in his playmaker's hands. And again, not to put everything on Will Levis, because there's other things going on,
right,
in this offense, but it really did feel like Sunday was the first game where you can really look at it and say, man, a quarterback change might have made that game and that offense look entirely different.
I agree 100%. And I mean, even you look at the interception, like Ridley had the DB beat.
Yep.
You know, but Levis, now to his credit, he wasn't really able to step into that as much as you would like to step into a downfield. He's not 100%. And so right, that rocket launcher that he normally has is not shooting the rockets the same way.
Not just the flick of the wrist that he usually needs.
Right, not just a flick of the wrist. But I think, you know, the reason why I'm so focused on Levis this time is because you can't really say the offensive line didn't do a good job.
No sacks.
He wasn't sacked, very little pressures, 95 yards passing. Okay, so you point to the receivers. Okay, well, you know, they could have gotten more separation. I think PFF or one of those outlets said really had like 1.7 yards of separation. Now, here's the thing with that. And I don't know the formula. Like, I don't know if it goes, like, on, like, when the ball is thrown or when it's, you know, point of contact,
yeah,
or whatever. But there were numerous times where the ball is late. So, like, if I'm making my break and you throw the ball late, you probably threw it, like, after I started creating the separation. So you got to look within those numbers is what,
yes,
I'm saying. I just believe this one was on Levis, that the lack of success, the conservative play calling.
While we're on the offensive line didn't allow a sack. I believe I saw it's the first time in 3 years that the Titans have not allowed a sack in a full game.
Yeah.
Initial impressions of Leroy Watson at right tackle. He had the three penalties, and I don't think anyone's going to look at that performance and say, right tackle's fixed. We found the guy, but I do think it's nice to see that you made the change there and you didn't give up a sack.
Yeah.
I know Callahan said that they're not handing Leroy Watson the job for the rest of the season, but nice to see that Will Levis stayed upright and was able to, you know, fail on his own on Sunday, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's nice to have one of the excuses wiped away.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So you're right. Shout out to Leroy Watson coming to he had the cowboy hat on and the ostrich boots and the vest. He was ready to go. Like, he knew it was his day, man. But look, he had a couple penalties. For the most part, no pressure. I think he held his own and he did what he needed to do. But let's not forget, like, this Colts front, it was deteriorated. Yep. You know,
no DeForest Buckner.
No Buckner. Quiddy Pay, you know, wasn't Quiddy Pay. And even as Quiddy Pay, he's still, you know, limited. So you do have that. But I just got to take 1 second. Dylan Radins, like, I'm making a salute. They pull him, and that's what I did on Whiteboard Wednesday, the video of him pulling. It was a different play. It was similar, very similar. But they pulled him, and he wiped out that linebacker. Like, Dylan Radins is playing football now. He's playing ball. Like, don't talk about the right guard situation being a problem. I want to shout him out because that man has caught so much flack when things didn't go well. But now that he's playing at least average, I feel above average, it's real quiet.
I got to say, no one's talking about him, too. I'm glad that you brought him up because everybody's talking about J.C. Latham, and rightfully so. He's looked like the seventh overall pick at left tackle. And you've talked a little bit about Peter Skoronski and Lloyd Cushenberry. No one talks about Dylan Radins, and as an offensive lineman, that might be the best thing that you could possibly have is that no one's worried about you anymore.
No one's worried.
Which wasn't the truth at the beginning of the season.
He's wiping them out. And you look, they're big runs. I'm not sure how many explosives, but I know three of them came on the strength of Dylan Radins going and getting somebody up out of the way.
Which makes you wonder, how good was Sadiq Charles if he was starting over Dylan Radins before he retired? You know, Dylan Radins, again, he's looked good. There has not really been more than maybe a couple of times that I have said, man, Radins blew that block. There was maybe one in the Bears game, maybe one in the Jets game, but I don't. The last couple weeks,
Bears,
he's looked good.
He whiffed on the block. No. Not the Bears, the Packers one.
Right.
The Packers
one. Which everybody kind of had a bad day in that one. You give up 9 sacks. I don't think anyone's grading out well on the offensive line. Jake and TD here on this Friday evening. Mentioned we're going to talk about L'Jarius Sneed. We'll talk about the secondary as a whole coming up next. Sneed had a couple of bad reps out there, but the Titans did get their first interception of the season. We've been waiting until week 6 to see the first interception. They were able to get it early on in that one. We'll talk about it next here on Jake and TD, presented by Soul Nashville here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake and TD, Friday evenings here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport getting you set for the weekend. Lots of football to get to, including Titans and Bills coming up on Sunday from Buffalo. Back-to-back tough road games coming up for the Titans. We will talk about the Bills coming up towards the end of the show, but we're still looking back at the Titans' 20-17 loss to the Indianapolis Colts back on Sunday inside Nissan Stadium. Talked about the offense and their struggles in the last segment. Will Levis getting a lot of the blame for that, and, you know, Calvin Ridley showing his frustration. But the defensive side of the ball, although they had some good moments on Sunday, L'Jarius Sneed, the high-priced trade acquisition the Titans made in the offseason, who he's looked really good through the first month of the season at times.
Yeah.
He had a tough go of it on Sunday, mostly against Alec Pierce. There were a few that Joe Flacco missed that could have been big plays. He had the pass interference penalty, and then Michael Pittman kind of going up and mossing him for the game-winning touchdown as well. Concern level for L'Jarius Sneed. I think people are maybe looking at it as, wow, how did he get burnt by Alec Pierce? Alec Pierce might be one of the best deep threats in the league right now. It was a bad day, but I don't have too much long-term concern.
The dude is averaging 28 yards per catch.
Yeah.
it's not like he's getting burnt by, you know, somebody that's dumpster juice. This dude is, and the thing with Pierce, and it's interesting, Christian Watson is very similar to where these guys, they seem to get up on you before you know it. And next thing you know, they're by you. So you got to flip your hips, turn and run. And it's almost like that interference call. I think that's what happened because it looked like, you know, Snead tried to flip his hips and run, but it was like too late. And then he was able to catch up a little bit. And, hey, look, sometimes you rather have the penalty than the long touchdown. And that's what happened there. Snead has to play better. He has to. But I just wonder if he's 100% because that hamstring is something that he hasn't said is an issue, but they've, you know, not practiced him. He's gotten the rest. So we'll see. But it is a frustrating thing to see, you know, when this team has spent so much resources and money to get him here.
Right. And, you know, Denard Wilson saying he thinks he's the best cornerback in the NFL. And, you know, when you say that and later that week he has a really bad game, you have to eat a little crow on that. But that doesn't mean he's not one of the best cornerbacks in the league.
Yeah.
Everybody has a bad day. And, you know, you hope that he can bounce back as he continues to get healthier. Some good things we saw on the defensive side of the ball. Man, Jarvis Brownlee Jr.
Yeah.
Yes, he got called for the pass interference penalty on the interception. I thought it was just good coverage. And, man, he flashed more than once on Sunday against
Absolutely.
The Colts. And maybe stealing a job from Chidobe Awuzie when he gets
Yeah, you saw him earlier in that drive. And I just love when players build that momentum and you see their confidence just boosting as the game goes on. And that's what was happening. And that's not to say it wasn't high already, you know. So you have that, and then you look, like he made the play. He came up and made the tackle on the screen, you know, blew through the block. And then he had Josh Downs running across it, who was giving them all types of fits. But Josh Downs ran the slant, and he got it, and he knocked it down. And he let the whole 615 know about it. You know, then you had the interception that should have been an interception. So, yeah, he's played outstanding football. And I just love the fact that, you know, he's a rookie, a fifth-round pick. Drafted very similar as far as the number. I think Snead was 138 and he was 143 or something like that. So right in the same area, he's a guy, he said he patterns his thought process after an approach after Snead. What a perfect guy to learn from. And
right.
Yeah, he showed up.
Seems like the Titans may have found themselves a steal in Jarvis Brownlee Jr. I mean, yes, the interception didn't count. I couldn't believe he got both feet down.
Yeah.
He showed off the athleticism, and you're right, even after the pick, he came up and made that play on Downs, I want to say at one point he got like four straight targets on four straight plays. They were just using him all over the place.
Yeah, they were killing it with him, man.
But Brownlee made some plays. Titans did have one interception that did count. First one this year. Imani Hooker was able to take away an overthrow, ended up leading to that first Titans touchdown. This is what the Titans are going to need if they're going to win football games, is they need defensive plays that are going to set up the offense with short fields.
And I'll say this, right? I'm one of them. I've critiqued Jeffrey Simmons and said they need him to make more plays. I want everyone to go back and watch the end zone copy of Imani Hooker's interception, right? Because I see fans saying, hey, trade Jeffrey Simmons, this, that, and the third. Well, if you go back and watch the end zone copy, you're going to see the guard getting forklifted back to the quarterback. And Joe Flacco couldn't get what he needed to get on the throw, and that's why Hooker picked it off. So, yes, Simmons needs to make more plays, but that's an example of a play that he makes nobody talks about. It doesn't show up in the box score, so it reinforces the narrative that he's not making enough.
You want Simmons to hit the quarterback. That's why you pay guys like that a lot of money, and maybe it doesn't make him look good that Dexter Lawrence, who was kind of paid around the same amount of money, he's up there towards the top of the league in sacks.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Jeffrey Simmons, he gets so much attention from defenses. I've probably brought it up five times on this show already throughout the season, but the Bears sack by Harold Landry, where the three offensive linemen all tried to block Jeffrey Simmons, so Harold Landry got a free run at the quarterback.
Yeah.
He impacts the game in different ways. Yes, you're right. Like, anybody who's saying he needs to make more plays, yes, they're right. But there are a lot of plays that don't show up in the box score that he made.
Exactly. He needs to make more plays, but it's not like he's not making any.
Titans defense. I do want to touch on one more player before we move on to the Bills. I thought Kenneth Murray flashed again. Like, that dude just continues to make plays. It was a little like bubble screen out to, or no, it was a screen pass to Sermon, I think, and Flacco kind of just floated it up, and Kenneth Murray was right there to just light him up.
He came up, and it was a loss of five. You know, he is a heat-seeking missile. He has what I call it. I always would joke with Kevin Byard about it, because Kevin Byard was the first one I applied this term to, but I was like, it's like you got a built-in GPS for the football. Like, you're going to find it one way or another. You're going to find it. And that's kind of how Kenneth Murray Jr. is. Now, I will say this. He did have the missed tackle and the running back 31. I forget his name. But he was able to get down to inside the five. But guess what? He redeemed himself by having a tackle for loss on third down to force the field goal. And I know some people will point to the Josh Downs touchdown on the out and up and say, hey, Kenneth Murray. No, that wasn't Kenneth Murray. They were in a zone coverage. Mike Brown went with, I forget who the receiver was, running an in-breaking route. Mike Brown went with him. Now, this is what it looked like to me. I don't know the exact call,
right.
So let me say it that way. It looked like Mike Brown was supposed to be over top. And what kind of reinforced that with me was after Josh Downs caught the touchdown, Kenneth Murray turned to him and was like, you know, what's up? And if you go back and you watch the play, you'll see the in-breaking route, and he went with it, and boom, it was open. So other than that, he did play really good.
You can usually tell, based on the reaction of the players, who was at fault. Like, there'll be somebody, palms to the sky, like, what are you doing? And someone else probably tapping their chest saying, that one was on me.
My bad.
Before we move on, I completely forgot to write this down in my notes for the show today. The pass interference no call on DeAndre Hopkins. To that before we move on. Not saying that it would have completely changed the game, because the Titans didn't prove that they could move the ball all that well in the second half.
It's a 20-plus yard game.
But, yeah, it forced a punt instead of continuing that drive, and who knows what would have happened.
You can't miss that.
Especially with – they were calling almost everything all day. I mean, the Snead pass interference on Pierce, it was pass interference. But it was just as much contact as that play against DeAndre Hopkins.
Hopkins was more.
Yeah.
Like, he flipped his shoulder to the whole, like, come on, man. That was egregious. You missing that is just, it's terrible. Like, I don't know. What are you watching? And the thing, the reason why I get on that official is because that's all you're watching.
Yeah. What else are you paying attention to that, like, you don't see that?
That's all you're watching.
I guess Brian Callahan said that the way he explained it was, I didn't see it the same way you saw it. I think the entire world saw it the same way Brian Callahan saw it.
Come on, man. That was terrible.
I like to see Brian Callahan getting after him there.
Oh,
though.
Yeah, he did get after him.
He was, it wasn't quite Colt Anderson after Jaquan Jackson let that ball fall against Miami, but it was. He was almost ready to spike the headset after that no call. So, tough one. Again, you don't know what would have happened after that play. Levis could have thrown a pick on the next play and still lost the game, but it ended up being a big turning point where the Titans really never got another chance to go win that game. Jake and TD here on this Friday evening. I think we've pretty much gone through that loss to the Colts all the way front and back, and now we can move on. We're going to talk about the Bills coming up next. Buffalo coming off a Monday Night Football win against the Jets. Can the Titans pull off the upset on the road? We'll talk about that coming up next. Jake and TD, presented by Soul Nashville, here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake and TD, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, wrapping up the show here on this Friday evening. Getting you set for a full weekend of football, including Titans and Bills, from Highmark Stadium. Up there in Buffalo.
Ritz Stadium, man. Nah, Highmark it is.
Titans trying to take down the Bills. Bills leading the AFC East and look like they may be on their way back to the playoffs. Titans heading into a tough stretch, having to play at Buffalo, at Detroit back-to-back weeks. If you have any chance of getting back into the playoff hunt, which it feels like slim and none, and Slim might be waiting for an Uber outside the building. You've got two games against two Super Bowl contenders on the road. And if you lose both of them, you fall to 1-6. This one on Sunday, it's not going to be easy to beat a Bills team that after maybe some lower expectations for them entering the season, they've been just as good as they've been for the past few years.
Yeah, they've been just as good, and they got better.
Yes.
They got Amari Cooper. And, you know, Khalil Shakur is back in the mix, too. I think that's really critical. You watch how Josh Downs was able to do what he did. And actually on Whiteboard Wednesday, that was one of the things that I featured, is using that motion and the orbit motion and I forget the ghost motion. Like, there's different ways that you put him in situations where he's in space and he could catch it and get some yards after the catch. So that's something to watch. I'm sure they'll have somewhat of a package for Amari Cooper. And then you got Keon Coleman, who is a guy that not the, you know, most dynamic receiver, but he's someone you throw it up there and back shoulder it, and he could really, really make things happen. So there's a lot, man. Josh Allen has, like, they like to go 12 personnel with Dalton Kincaid and Dalton Schultz, you know, the local product. And not Dalton Schultz, Dawson Knox. Excuse me, Dawson Knox. And look, there's all types of things that offense is going to present.
They have one of the most unique sets of weapons in the league, I think. I mean, James Cook, he missed Monday night's game, but I think the expectation is he'll be back for Sunday. Josh Allen is such a threat running and throwing the football. And I love watching Josh Allen because he will make throws that no one else will even think about trying to make. And yeah, sometimes he throws really terrible interceptions, but there are other times where he's within half an inch of the sideline and jumping into the bench and just throws it up and, oh, there's Khalil Shakir somewhere downfield for a 50-yard gain. He does some things that even Patrick Mahomes may not even think about trying.
And the way he extends plays is a lot like an old head at the playground. You know what I mean? Because you get the old head, he'll catch the ball underneath the rim, and first thing you do is going to pump fake you. And that's the exact same thing that he does. He'll pump fake you, get in the air, and then he'll run by you and make the throw. And his pump fake is second to none in the league. And he is someone, he's so big too, so it's just a hassle having to play against a guy like that because – he extends plays. His arm could get it anywhere on the move and everything like that. You got to love it.
Amari Cooper being added to the mix. You mentioned probably a package for him. I don't think he's going to be able to jump in from Tuesday to Sunday and be a full Amari Cooper for this team. But another guy that you have to prepare for, and the Titans defense will hopefully be able to be up to the task against what is a very tough Bills offensive attack. On the other side, what are we hoping to see from Will Levis this week? After, again, we've talked about it all show. Like, the last couple of weeks and the first month of the season, you could always kind of make excuses. The offensive line, the receivers, blah, 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 the play calling. That one was kind of on him on Sunday. How does he respond? How does he bounce back and give you a chance to win against Buffalo?
I really think you have to get back to play action. And, you know, play action with that strike route, that, you know, crosser, and a post over top, and just like, hey, look, man, just high-low it, right? You know, if he comes down to the dig, to the crosser, throw the post. If he drifts to the post, throw the crosser. If neither of those are there, you got Tajay Spears or Tony Pollard, you know, swinging. Check it down to him. Let's make a profit and not go broke. I think you really have to simplify it to that. And Brian Callahan says something. He said, you know, there are things that Will Levis does well. I have to play more into that. What he does well is throw the football down the field.
Yeah.
So, in some cases, dumb it down for him just to the point where it's like, look, man, if that's there, throw it. But if you don't see that, just go here and let's live to see another play. Don't force it, right? And have it set up to where there's minimum things that he has to read. You know what I mean? And if you could just get him to play as opposed to
thinking so much,
you could have something. But – I'm really getting to the point where I think there's a cap. And I'm not one to cancel Christmas, right, and say the season is over. But I think it's time to watch and take a closer look at Shedeur Sanders. Because if things go the way they seem they're going to be, this team's going to be picking a quarterback. I personally think he's the best fit. You look at just, you know, the timing, the rhythmic passing that he's able to do, the accuracy that he has, the ability to scramble, the swagger. I'm just saying. I mean, I know it's early to talk draft, especially when you're talking about quarterback, but yeah.
Back-to-back games mentioned, Bills, Lions on the road. You could be 1-6, and at 1-6, it's almost mock draft season at that point, which is it's tough. But you're right. Shedeur Sanders seems to be the one guy at the top of that draft who hasn't had his draft stock be kind of roller coaster right now. Like 2 weeks ago, we were all about Jalen Milroe. Well, he's had a couple of tough weeks against Vanderbilt and South Carolina, and you know Cam Ward has shown flashes, but also probably could have lost to Cal and Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I think with Cam Ward, you get a lot of the same stuff you get with Levis, where you have those decisions
right.
and those plays, and you're just like, bro, like, what are you doing? You don't get that with Sanders, you know? So I'm not saying 100% Shedeur Sanders is the best quarterback in this draft. I think he's the best fit for the Titans, though.
And certainly would be a draw for the new stadium, having Deion Sanders' son as your starting quarterback. I know it's early to be talking about this, but, you know, 1-4 with the way the schedule's playing out, it doesn't seem like we can really talk about the playoff push for all that much
and it's,
longer.
It's just where the conversation went. You know, here's the thing. Levis has plenty of ability, plenty. But if that ability doesn't match what Callahan wants to do, like, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the way it is, right? You got a guy who could do things, but the coach you know, his mindset, his approach doesn't vibe with it, and you have a bad result. I let's see if Callahan, like, this is a good challenge for him in trying to find ways to accentuate what Levis does well.
Right.
And I like the fact that he admitted that, you know, so we'll see.
I may have asked you this when we were out at the golf course filling in for Jared. Are you a golfer, TD?
No, not at all.
I equate to what Will Levis is doing as – in golf, I've always been told to have one thought when you're standing over the ball, when you're swinging, like whether that's keep your elbow tucked in or keep your eye on the back of the ball. Have one thought. Mm. It feels like Will Levis, when he drops back to pass, he's thinking about 80 different things of what he's being coached to do.
Exactly.
And I don't know if it's over-coaching him. They have to tell him these things. It just feels like he's not focusing on one thing on each throw and each drop back. He's focusing on trying to do all of it all at once, and that's never going to work.
Yeah. You remember the old Terminator movies?
Yeah.
And you know, like he would scan stuff, and it would say, you know, Sarah Connor, confirmed, boom, and he's shot. You know what I mean? That's how it's got to be.
It's got to be like that. Split-second decisions.
Yeah, it can't be, oh, Sarah Connor, wait a minute, is that Susan Connor? No.
Loading?
No, you got to see it, shoot it, man, and that's not what's happening.
The hope is that it will improve. And like you said, Brian Callahan, his job as a coach is to make things as easy for Will Levis as they possibly can be.
Yeah.
And we'll see if maybe some of that develops this week in Buffalo. TD, enjoy Western New York.
I
know the Buffalo Wings.
The Wings are
coming. They're calling your name.
Yeah.
I will be jealous. Hopefully, hopefully we get a good game up on Sunday. Again, Titans and Bills, noon kick up there in Buffalo. Titans trying to get to 2-4 on the year. TD, another fun show.
That's right. Keep them rolling.
We'll be back next Friday, same time, same place, 6-7. Who knows? Maybe we'll be leading into College Game Day being in Nashville. If Texas can take care of Georgia this Saturday and Vandy takes care of Ball State.
Imagine the reception Saban's going to get.
I know. After what he said about Vanderbilt. I doubt it because they're in Austin this week, so I don't know if they do Texas back-to-back, but who knows? If they are, we'll talk about it next week. Jake and TD signing off here. As always, we're brought to you by Soul Nash. We'll be back next week from 6 to 7. Baseball up next. Guardians and Yankees Game 4 here on 102.5 and 106.3.